Good evening. I'd like to call to order the Thursday, April 17th, 2025 meeting of the Shoreline Planning Commission. First is roll.
Thank you. Chair Brinson is absent with notice. Commissioner Cabe?
Present.
Commissioner Hadley?
Present.
Commissioner Lynn?
Here.
Vice Chair Mosier?
Here.
And Commissioner Pove?
Here.
Thank you. I have not heard from Commissioner Fry, but hopefully he'll show up.
Hopefully.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, approval of the agenda. Any changes, additions? Super. How about approval of our minutes from our last meeting, January 16th? Or not January 16th. Thank you. April 3rd. Said it out loud, didn't seem right. Any comments, changes to the minutes? No, excellent. How about public comment? Do we have anybody signed up tonight, Carla?
No public comment tonight, thank you.
Excellent. Moving right along. That brings us to our first study item this evening, discussion of environmentally critical area code updates.
Good evening. It's been a couple months. good evening, commissioners. My name is Elise Keim, planning manager here with the city, here to discuss a work plan item we have this year, the update to the city's critical areas code. A preview of what is in store for you this evening. We'll go over what are critical areas and why are they protected, state requirements around critical areas, some terminology that will be become very familiar with by the end of this process, the proposed code review and update, and proposed schedule. So first up, what are critical areas? Well, there are five types of critical areas designated in state code that cities like Shoreline that plan under the Growth Management Act are required to regulate. These include wetlands, aquifer recharge areas, frequently flooded areas, geologically hazardous areas, and fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. A real mouthful. So let's explore what these different types of critical areas are. A wetland is a critical area characterized by soils with low oxygen and plant life that really thrives in that low oxygen environment. And as the name suggests, there is water present for at least some part of the year. Some common examples of wetlands are marshes, bogs, and swamps. Now, wetlands play really essential roles in watershed health in a number of different ways. They help reduce and slow flooding. The plants in wetland environments really help to improve water quality. And wetlands really drain very slowly. So during the dry summer months, as wetlands drain, they can really help maintain stream flow and recharge groundwater. That brings us to our next critical area, aquifer recharge areas. They are all about water under the ground, also known as groundwater. Groundwater can be a really important source of drinking water for individuals and communities. Groundwater needs to maintain a balance between recharge, that's water entering the groundwater environment, and discharge, that's water that leaves the groundwater environment, either through natural processes or through pumping of things like wells. Important considerations in aquifer recharge areas are water quantity, water quality, making sure that the groundwater table doesn't become contaminated, and the speed of groundwater recharge and discharge to make sure that the water table remains balanced. Our next critical area are frequently flooded areas. They are often referred to as floodplains. These are areas that are regulated due to the risks that they pose to people, property, and infrastructure. Some major data sources around frequently flooded areas come from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and the National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP. These entities provide maps of frequently flooded areas that cities can use to help guide their regulations. Now, as a result of climate change, communities are starting to think about frequently flooded areas in some other ways, perhaps due to risks of sea level rise or flooding that can occur due to a greater frequency and severity of extreme weather events. So this one's a little bit in flux. Our third type of critical area are geologically hazardous areas. They are regulated, similar to flood areas, due to the risks that they pose to people, property, and infrastructure. There are a lot of different types of geologically hazardous areas, maybe areas prone to landslide or erosion, earthquakes, volcanoes, and even mine hazards. Major data sources for these hazards come from the Department of Natural Resources, specifically the Washington Geological Survey. It provides a series of maps that tells us about soil types and maybe slope heights that help us understand what risks might be present in our community. The fifth and final type is fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. Now, these fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas are managed to ensure sufficient habitat quantity, quality, and connectivity to make sure that that's present to support a long-term viable population of fish and wildlife species, and to make sure that isolated subpopulations aren't created as environments degrade or there's habitat loss. Major sources of information around fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas come from the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife. There are a number of different types of fish and wildlife habitats. Maybe it's habitat specific to endangered species. It can be commercial or recreational shellfish areas or kelp and eelgrass beds. But for the purposes of the code update, we are going to most closely focus on streams. Now, all of these different types of critical areas have impacts on anadromous fish. Anadromous fish are species that spend part of their life cycle in freshwater and part of their life cycle in saltwater. Some examples are salmon, bull trout, and steelhead. It's a requirement of the Growth Management Act that cities regulate critical areas with special consideration to impacts to anadromous fish, as they are impacted by all of these critical areas, and they are so important to Washington State for environmental, economic, and cultural reasons. So we've learned all the five different types of critical areas. Why are we protecting them? Now, not all areas and ecosystems are critical for the same reasons, and you might have picked up on that in some of the descriptions of the different types. Some are critical because of the values that they present, ecosystem health, wildlife habitat, water quality, or cultural, aesthetic, and recreational values. And some are critical because of the hazards they present, ecological hazards like landslides or flooding that really put a risk to people, property, and infrastructure. To that end, critical areas regulations fall into basically two camps: a protection of functions and values of the critical area, and a protection of health and safety from the critical area. And of course, they can and do overlap. In addition to protecting functions and values and health and safety, having up-to-date critical areas regulations helps cities maintain compliance with state and federal laws. So let's talk about some of the state requirements. The Growth Management Act requires cities to designate critical areas, protect their functions and values, in doing so, utilize best available science, and must have special consideration for anadromous fish. State agencies like the Department of Ecology, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Department of Natural Resources provide a lot of information and technical guidance for cities to help designate their critical areas and provide management recommendations that cities can incorporate into their regulations. cities are required to update their critical areas regulations periodically. The state sets a specific deadline for achieving that work. Cities are to update their critical areas regulations within 12 months after their comprehensive plan is updated. And we just had our major update at the end of last year. So our deadline is the end of this year, 2025, to update our critical areas regulations. So let's talk terminology. As we work through this code, we will become very familiar with a lot of terms and really specific jargon. And I thought it might be helpful to introduce some of those terms to you now. Perhaps we can build out a glossary as we work through this. First up, functions and values. When we say functions and values, we mean those core ecological processes performed by a critical area. The Growth Management Act requires cities to protect these functions and values, so when that impact to a critical area is contemplated, we understand what about that critical area is it that we're really trying to protect. Protection of critical areas, this is important, it does not mean that critical areas will not be impacted. Impacts are to be avoided where possible, absolutely. But if impacts are unavoidable, appropriate mitigation is required in order to replace the lost functions and values of critical areas. And the important metric there is no net loss of those functions and values. And no net loss is measured relative to baseline existing conditions. Importantly, the Growth Management Act only requires the prevention of further harm to the critical areas, not the enhancement of critical areas that were previously damaged. Best available science is something cities are required to use when reviewing and updating critical areas regulations. Best available science means scientific information that is presently available and that is practically and economically feasible to obtain. Some examples of characteristics are scientific information generated from a valid scientific process, it's relevant to the specific critical area being studied, and it's prepared by a qualified professional. State agencies put a lot of effort into developing and updating accurate, best available scientific information that cities can use as a baseline when crafting their critical areas regulations. The city's last major update to its critical areas code was in 2015 with Ordinance 723. The city recently updated its comprehensive plan, and that plan helps provide the necessary policy support to update the critical areas code in using best available science. Now, the city has actually already performed a best available science review of the existing code, so that work has been done. And what we found is that most of the code, it still meets the best available science standard that we're required to incorporate. But the area that changed is related to fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas, specifically streams. In 2020, the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife published updated scientifically based information about stream management, which the city will need to review and incorporate into its critical areas code. So staff are planning to review this information and provide to you recommendations to update the code as necessary to meet that best available science standard. In addition to this work, staff are also intending to spend some time taking a look at the code's organization and navigability and required permit processes that are listed in the code to understand if there may be some options to streamline the code or make it more efficient while still protecting critical areas, functions, and values. The proposed schedule is in order to meet that the critical areas code be updated, utilizing best available science with special consideration for anadromous fish by the end of 2025. The proposal is we spend a lot of time this summer studying stream science and regulations informed by stream science to have a hearing in the fall where Planning Commission will make a recommendation to council to take action by the end of the year to update the critical areas code. So we've gone over what are critical areas, why we regulate them, and state requirements. We have talked through some terminology and discussed the proposed approach and schedule for the critical areas code update. Now I'd like to turn it over to some questions.
Mike.
Thank you. How to hit the button. Going over that again, what's everyone, any questions to either of them, but specifically the five types of critical areas? No?
The intention for staff is probably to focus most of our time on fish and wildlife habitat, specifically streams. So that's where we're planning to put our energies.
Yeah.
And if that sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Anybody know of any code processes or improvements? I don't deal a lot with it, so I know I don't know any.
Okay.
Anyone else? No.
We've been administering this code for about a decade now, and staff have certainly realized some areas where maybe it's not clear, or, hey, there might be a way that we can achieve the desired outcome, but in a more efficient manner. So we wanted to just fold that work into here to take advantage.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you.
Other questions?
I don't think so. Oh, I'm sorry, Meisha.
This is just out of curiosity. So because we talk about baseline and like the aquifer level,
mm-hmm.
Now does that data get updated per the state or per?
Yes, so agencies do a lot of work to update the baseline data that we can use to apply in a local context. Importantly, their data sort of looks at a larger scale, right? It's state data. and then when perhaps a specific local project comes in, they take a closer look and we can better understand what functions and values need to be protected, what mitigation is appropriate, or if the impact can be avoided altogether through other designs.
And just following up, so on that, I know that city has this map of critical area shown, and it's publicly available. So that is that pretty much keep in line with already updated baseline?
Yes. Yes. So it as the sort of like the publication schedule through those agencies, but I can confirm with our GIS when they pull that data, because I don't know it off the top of my head. But in general, the streams haven't moved.
Right.
But, you know, over a long period of time, potentially they could. Or, for example, like a Seattle example, that Thornton Creek was piped for a number of years, and then they daylit the stream, right? And so that's a specific project that then updates and provides to us GIS data, which we would then use to update our records, and then the state can also use those as well. So it kind of flows both ways.
Thank you. Julie.
This was really interesting. Thank you. You did a great job. I enjoyed it.
Well, I think that covers the study item. Thank you, Elise. Right. Next on our list, then, study item 6B is amending Planning Commission rules of procedure. And I believe we're taking a vote on this one tonight to change the rules.
No.
Just to prime us all for making motions and voting.
Are we sure?
I was thinking about it. I don't know that I did it wrong.
No, I thought I saw that. It's doing it. It
took a while earlier. Okay, hold on. Whoop. So weird, because
a lot of information.
Can you do it? Okay. Yeah, there's like...
Loading.
There's four slides, yeah.
So thank you. If you remember, I was here a couple of weeks ago, kind of giving you the rundown on changing the procedures and in your bylaws. So what this specifically is to reduce confusion among the public and consolidation of agenda time for public comment. So staff is proposing the commission agenda follow kind of the same sequence as the city council does for public comment. And that's whether it's a general comment or for a comment on a specific agenda item on that night. So this would delete the public comment after staff gives a presentation on specific items during discussion. And what it doesn't change is that opportunity for the public to comment if it is a public hearing item. So that process would remain the same as it always was. So the changes or the order of business shown on the screen, first four wouldn't change, and then number five is when public comment would come in. This would be for general or agenda items for that meeting, for those discussion meetings. The public hearing would be a little bit different, where it'd be staff presentation, commission's questions, and then public testimony after that staff presentation and commission discussion. And number seven, study items, is where the public comment drops out, and that would just be a staff presentation and commission discussion. And then everything else would stay the same on those order of business. So staff does recommend commission approve the changes to the rules as shown in your attachment A. And just procedurally, this will require four votes and support to move forward. And I'm here for any questions that you have.
Thank you. What does everyone think? Any thoughts? Any questions for our friend Steve up there? Thoughts? I think it's a good idea to consolidate comments. I mean, also, if the city council does it, it seems consistency amongst city bodies might be a good idea, just so everyone knows what to expect. And I think it was important, I don't know if you mentioned, but in the packet I mentioned, it lets also people come at the beginning of the meeting and say what they want to say. And then if they don't want, if it's a 3-hour meeting, they don't have to hang around for all 3 hours to listen to us talk to each other. I'm supportive of it.
I agree with all those statements.
I agree as well.
Okay. Well, so on the number six there, is it in our bylaws, or have we just been doing it out of practice and regularity between 6B and 6C? I'm sorry, it says commission initial questions. I answered my own question by rereading your thing. Never mind. I had a question, and it's very clearly in front of me.
Okay.
Never mind.
The procedures that are supposed to occur?
Yeah. I read it differently the first time. Excuse me. Okay. So we need to vote on it. Would anyone like to make a motion to vote on it? Or a motion to approve? Or recommend, excuse me.
I make a motion to approve the staff proposed change to our agenda.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you. I guess we'll take a vote then. Can we just do show of hands, or do we need to do by roll?
I'll do it. I'll just call it.
Okay.
Commissioner Povich.
I vote yes.
Okay. Commissioner Fry?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mosher?
Yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Lynn?
Yes.
Commissioner Cabe?
Yes.
Commissioner Hadley?
Yes.
Thank you.
That brings us to that side of it. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Next, unfinished business. Any unfinished business? Nope. How about new business? Anything new and exciting to talk about? Nope. Reports or announcements? How about the agenda for our next meeting, May 1st?
Yeah, so next time we'll be bringing back the discussion on the parking minimums.
Exciting. Brings us to our end of our agenda. We are adjourned. Thank you.